Hello and welcome to the Elts Nerds Show, beta number 0. We're testing it out before we ship it out live. Well, we're live now, but before we ship it out over on Galactic Netcast next week, or maybe 2 weeks if this episode totally sucks. I'm Craig or Sprague, and joining me as always is Corey Scott, and this is a show where we're going to talk about, basically expand what else is on from just, instead of where it's just about the shows and movies, to the comic books and, you know, whatever else is on our nerdy hearts here. So, Corey, how you doing?
I guess we'll say it's what else is on our minds, because we are the brains behind the calamity that is this show. And I'm doing okay, although we lost a couple great people today. Metalark Lemon from the Harlem Globetrotters passed away, and then Lemmy from Motorhead passed away. And now I have in my head this idea of Metalark Lemmy, who would just be this badass screaming basketball player telling me to not forget the Joker. But hey, other than that, I'm excited we're doing our beta show.
Yeah, and but the weird part with that, though, is that today's Stan Lee's 93rd birthday.
Yes.
So it's like, that's what I start out
everybody.
With. Is, yeah, it's like Stan Lee, man who it's like, okay, how has he lived this long and all that stuff? I mean, not like, it's like I want to see Stan Lee die, but it's
off
like,
the blood of Jack Kirby. Oh, no, I'm kidding. Not really.
But no, it's, I mean, it was just something I'm like, wow, he outlasted a Harlem Globetrotter, probably numerous Harlem Globetrotters now, but it's like, okay, yeah, this is, I don't know, I have nowhere else to go that will not sound really sick and horrible, so let's just move.
That's okay, I was going to open the show with the Else of Spades joke, and I just figured that sounded terrible, so let's just move along.
Alright, so we are going to talk a little bit about right now, about Hateful Eight. Corey, you saw it in the movie theaters. I have not.
I did not see it in the movie theater. Let's talk about ripping people off.
Okay, sure. Would Tasteful Dave approve of this?
I don't care. That's why we're in beta. Let's just say I turned on my TV and clicked a few buttons, and all of a sudden the Hateful Eight was there to watch, and I probably would not have gone to see it in the theater, although I would have eventually liked to have seen the movie.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I see films in the theater kind of rarely. So it's enough to get me off my ass to go see Star Wars, while I have friends who've seen it 2 to 3 times so far already, and that's why it's crossing $1 billion in record time. I'm not that guy. I would like to see The Hateful Eight, so I did. And I feel truly, truly terrible about it, Quentin. I want you to know it has nothing to do with solidarity for the cops that are all angry at you. I just didn't want to pay to see your movie. But I did see it. And overall, it was long. There is something to be said for the difference in my bladder of being at home watching a long movie versus being in theater watching a long movie, and I think it applies to the consumption of the Coke that I got when I saw Star Wars, of like sitting there that last 10 minutes going, all right, credits soon, come on, credits. I got through this without any kind of issues. It was pretty good. Now, I have been kind of hesitant with Quentin's last couple of films. I watched Inglourious Basterds and I didn't really love it. And there are things about it that kind of irk me, and there was some of that in this. I think there was also a lot of the N-word being thrown around, which was going back to Django Unchained, which I have not seen. That
Same
was
here.
Pretty big on that. And that bothers me in the fact that I don't love the word, but I understand that it's part of the story. Usually a problem that I have is Quentin doesn't shy away from violence against women in his films, and there was a pretty harsh scene in Inglourious Basterds where a woman is being strangled on the floor by a Nazi, you know, so he's a bad guy already. But it was just really hard to watch, and there is some similar stuff in this that was also very hard to watch. But aside from those couple of things, it played out like a Quentin's All-Stars, because we've got Tim Roth, we've got Samuel Jackson, Kurt Russell, Michael Madsen, a whole bunch of people who have worked with him before, and then some new people. Jennifer Jason Leigh, I don't remember her being in any of his stuff before, but she was great in the part that she played. Bruce Dern is in this, plays a pretty cool, not cool like awesome dude, but cool like in the part that he played in it. It also felt maybe a little too familiar. Like, I wasn't blown away or generally surprised by anything in this movie because I've seen his stuff before. It's a Western kind of Reservoir Dogs is what I take it back to, with a bit of Agatha Christie thrown in.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad movie at all. And since he had the script leaked online about a year or two ago and was going to not make the movie because of it, because the spoilers would not wreck the film, but give a lot away of the enjoyment of watching it play out. I can see why he would be frustrated and want to step back from it, but I'm glad he made the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's going to go into the higher end quality of Quentin's list of films. Like if you're going to err on the side of, is it a great, is it okay, is it bleh? I don't know that he's ever made a bleh film, but I would put this closer to the good moving up side of things at the very least. Tim Roth was probably one of my favorite characters, but he was pretty much playing Tim Roth in Four Rooms, which was a great role and one of the reasons why I love Tim Roth. Samuel Jackson didn't feel like he wasn't Samuel Jackson. Kurt was excellent in the part that he played, but I know that he played a similar character in Bone Tomahawk recently, and I haven't seen that movie yet. Aaron and I have been talking about seeing it, and so I want to see the comparison between the two.
Yeah.
Overall, it was good. It was certainly, you know, aside from the harsher bits, very enjoyable, a fun watch, beautiful. He does go on at scenes where it just seems like this is taking a longer time than it really needs to. But Quentin is a dialogue writer. He is a scene painter. Those are his strengths. It's not a lot of motion. When there's action, but the action is almost to get you to the next speech that somebody's going to make. And when you know his quirks, they can be a little blatant. But I don't think that they're bad quirks. And there are certainly things that, you know, the dialogue heavy stuff is something that I think I suffer from as a writer, or benefit from. It's hard to say. It depends on your tastes. I don't know that I put together quite the same kind of story structure as he has, at least not to the degree of success that I think he's found. Not just like success with the audience and success financially, but I mean, in telling a good story, I think he tells a really good story.
Yeah.
And I think it's an admirable effort. I don't think it's going to blow away the movie going public. I know that it had a pretty good weekend, but it was in a small amount of theaters. I don't think this is something that everybody's going to rush out to see. But I think that the kind of people who are his audience will go out and see it and like it.
Yeah.
Everybody who doesn't like his shit will piss and moan about it.
Yeah, which is probably the bad part about it. But I mean, I'm a Tarantino fan. I mean, like it took me a little bit to see some of his older stuff, but it was like since Kill Bill was what brought me into Tarantino. But I had heard of him beforehand cuz my cousin, he had the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. And he would play that whenever we would go somewhere. And so, I mean, from what it sounds like I would enjoy this movie. It probably would be worth spending the free ticket that I got because I paid for Star Wars tickets and did the little scratch-off thing on Fandango and all that to go see.
Yep. And Beatmaster's mentioning the music was very fitting and not the obvious Tarantino soundtrack. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of music. The music choices he made were perfectly suited to it. One of the things that we noticed when Aaron and I were watching it is they play a song called Apple Blossom by Jack White and the White Stripes, and that is one of Aaron's and my songs that I put on the CD 4 years ago. And we both perked up for like, oh, that's our song. The only White Stripes song that I like, as a matter of fact, and I really relished in hearing it in the soundtrack in this.
But yeah, so that is Hateful Eight. I want to talk about sort of my solo bringings to here is a comic book. Now, and this is what one of the things that you're going to see with the show is more talk of comic books and more reviews of comic books. Basically, I figure, hey, we're lazy enough to where we're going to do one show. Why not cram everything that we were promising from three shows into the one sort of deal? That's sort of my, what I got from Corey when we were talking about this in our in the Patreon hangout thing that quickly turned into a host hangout. But yeah, so and this comic book is from Vertigo. I've been getting into Vertigo comics more and more frequently, and it is called The Twilight Children. Now, this is a 4-issue miniseries written by Gilbert Hernandez and drawn by Darwin Cook. Now, and you could probably tell me, like, they list on here that Gilbert Hernandez has done Love and Rockets, and Darwin Cook had done DC's The New Frontier.
Yeah, Cook is an amazing artist. Just has a kind of classic sort of think of 50s era Flash Gordon kind of thing. It's just a little bit pop art, a little bit kind of steampunky in a feel kind of thing. Like when he draws superheroes, they look like mystery men more than they look like the Silver Age and Golden Age characters that we've come to grow in.
I was waiting, as you started talking about him, I was waiting for you to hit the one thing that made me really enjoy this book, aside from the story, and it's with the art. And that's, and maybe it's just what he's doing for this book, but it has a very Bruce Timm's Batman the Animated Series style to it.
That is 100% correct.
Yeah, because like there are panels in there where I'm like, is this taken like right out of Batman the Animated Series? Like, because it's just with like how, especially with how he draws women in here in this book. And the book, it is a good story. It's not like, oh, I'm just admiring the art like I would from some like a Michael Allred book, like Art Ops or iZombie or you know whatever, like you know whatever the book might be. But I mean, the story is a good story. You are in this, this remote Latin American village, and a group of children naturally they find this orb, this white orb in the middle of the ocean, and these children naturally do what children will do and go investigate, go look at the orb, go poke the dead body with the stick, and then that's sort of where shenanigans happen, and the town drunk gets abducted, some other people get abducted after they see other orbs appear around town. And you have the local sheriff trying to corral everything. The government agents come in who are on vacation, but it's done to the point where you know they're not on vacation. You know, like they're like, yeah, I'm just on vacation. And it's like, no, you're not. You're wanting to figure out what the heck's going on so you can capture yourself an alien. And you have the woman of ill repute, I think might be the word to go there. She's a little looser with her gooser, to sort of coin a term there. And oh, actually, wait, they're CIA agents. So they're American agents, but as I just look over and see CIA, I'm like, oh, yeah. But it's really interesting, and it's built up nice. Like, as it goes, they've released the first 3 issues out of the 4, and part of me wants to see this be like, okay, this is an end for the first book and we're going to come back to this story, because it seems like it's going to be a Jonathan Hickman ending a a book, a Marvel event book sort of thing, where it's like, oh, we're gonna have 40 pages all wrapped up to all wrap up the story close enough. Looking at Secret Wars number 9.
That's every Marvel event book. I do want to point out that Darwin Cook actually worked as a storyboard artist for Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series, and he animated the main title design for Batman Beyond. So it makes sense that he's got that Bruce Timm look. He was part of that.
Because he's a part of that Bruce Timm look.
Yeah, and as far as 4 issues and what happens next, Vertigo has been kind of in a flux as a publisher or a publishing house, even under DC, for a number of years. They haven't quite stabilized since the days of their heyday of Sandman and Preacher and Animal Man and Doom Patrol and all those other great titles. And especially when DC stole some of their characters away towards the mainstream DC superhero universe. So they've been chasing some new way of getting stories in there. And really, it mostly comes down to Karen Berger leaving the imprint. She was the heart and soul of that thing from the beginning, and to lose her affected it in a big way. So it makes sense for them to try to do shorter stories to see how they catch on, because you dedicate yourself to a 12-issue maxi series or something, or a new regular series, and it's a wonder if it's going to see month 6.
No, yeah. Like, they've done that with the book Suiciders. I think it was billed more as a limited series, or here's the first story arc, and if people aren't buying it, oh well. If they do, I have more tons of other places I can go. Or even Art Ops. Like, Art Ops, with it being Michael Allred doing the art, I feel like it's more of a they have so many issues that they initially got, and then they can continue if they need to. The one that I feel like they are going to try to do is Lucifer. Like, they released Lucifer last week.
The new series.
Yeah.
But isn't that a miniseries also?
I don't know, to be honest, but I feel like that one, they're trying to bank on the fact that there's a TV show, a Lucifer TV show going on as well.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, Lucifer has a lot of backlog of issues, but it wasn't a crime procedural.
Yeah.
It was a completely different kind of book. And Lucifer, actually, the character had started out in Neil Gaiman's Sandman series and spun out from that into its own book. So, yeah, trying something more in line with the TV program makes a certain degree of sense to come out around the same time. That's always one of these things that it seems like these companies miss out on, is like, oh, here's our new Supergirl TV series, and there's no Supergirl comic book right now. Why is that? And so we have to scramble and put something together that's in the TV continuity as opposed to the regular DC continuity, because we can't seem to make Supergirl work in the DC continuity right now.
Yeah. The other two that I'll give a quick shout out to for Vertigo, books that I'm enjoying is Unfollow, which is a more political version of the Hunger Games or Battle Royale. So, I don't know if you've heard about any of these comic books, but Unfollow basically, picture a Steve Jobs-esque billionaire. Who has created this app that appears on people's phones, and you have...
You mean Tony Stark?
Yeah. Similar to the Tony Stark Invincible Iron Man storyline that they did. But with this one, if you get... Only 140 people get the app, and if you're one of them people, you get a part of his fortune.
So it's like what everybody thinks is going on Facebook right now, with Mark Zuckerberg's giving away $1 million to some random Facebook user.
Yeah.
Reposting this thing, you're in.
Yeah, except take that and then go like, okay, there's 140 people that Mark Zuckerberg did. But after this time, once he does die, it will get split up amongst however many people are still surviving. So if 139 people magically disappear, then this whoever's left, you get all the money. Congratulations. It's a really interesting title. It's a really interesting book. I don't think they've even introduced all 140 people, but I'm sitting there going, holy crap, this is a really, they got some batshit crazy people in here for this book, like as characters, and it's awesome. The other one is done by, Tim King, and it's The Sheriff of Babylon, and this is based on his, Tom King, sorry, it's based on his work in Iraq. Like there are panels in here that it looks exactly like you're there. Like it there's this peep show and you're on someone's, like you're on a GoPro camera watching these events, and it's good, it's gripping and heart wrenching, and you just, they've only had one issue out and I cannot wait for the second issue.
Tom King, the co-writer on Grayson, correct?
Yes. Yes, with Tim Seeley, who does Revival.
Yes.
Yeah. And he said, Tom King, that he has said that he's taking some stuff from his time there and putting it into the comic book, which makes sense, you know. And it's a cool thing. So those are a couple, like three comic book picks. I wasn't expecting to do that. And before we get into what probably a lot of people have watched over the past 2 weeks to get it $1 billion guaranteed, I'm going to do what used to be Starts and Stops, where I think we're now going to call Curtain Call. Could change, who knows, whatever. And this is starting with the stuff that's coming out streaming this next month in January. On Netflix, on the TV side, what I will bring to mind is New Girl Season 4 comes out. So I think it's before the fifth season. The final season of Degrassi comes out of Parks and Rec, sorry, comes out on January 13th. The new, how Netflix bought or saved Degrassi, that's coming out the 15th. On the movie side, Sharknado 3 comes out on the 22nd. There's a Stephen Fry comedy, actually. I want to say it's a stand-up special that comes out on the 1st that I'm really excited for. And I'm like, oh, cool, sweet. And then leaving Netflix, Almost Famous, A Clockwork Orange. Actually, better yet, go to cnet.com/netpicks, because I, as Actar for the days on a lot of these, put brilliant little capture or like comment things like January 1st. It's Sesame Street and Sylvester Stallone, because all the is it Rambo or Rocky? Rambo movies are going bye-bye, as well as Sesame Street. And it's cool to see that, how he has that done. The next one, Amazon Prime. Dazed and Confused comes out the 1st. I probably should have looked ahead and seen. There's not too much coming out to Amazon Prime. Mad Dog Season 1 comes out the 22nd. Hulu, not too much there. Project Almanac comes out on the 2nd. A lot of the newer shows will be on Hulu as well. HBO, which is a new one. We have a Leaving on there, so Superman Returns is gone. Will be gone at the beginning of the year. The Entourage movie is coming out the 23rd. As well as Whitney Cummings' HBO special, I'm Your Girlfriend. Crackle has some interesting stuff here. You have Married with Children Season 8, The Shield Season 1 and 2, because they go through, even though I think Sony owns all the Shield, they put them out like Season 1 and 2, and then 3 and 4, 5 and 6, all the way down. And then stuff that's on only for 1 month, 8mm, which I think is the J.J. Abrams movie, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I have no idea. I know that it was Nicolas Cage.
Is that a Nick Cage one? All right. What else? Godzilla, the 1998 Godzilla movie, is out only for the month of January. And Underworld, Rise of the Lycans, and then Safety Not Guaranteed. I think I saw that one. I think I'd recommend that, Safety Not Guaranteed. And then Tubi TV actually had this one. I'm like sitting there going, okay, this is cool. They actually have on their webpage, because I checked them out again, stuff that they bill as not available on Netflix. One of those, which is coming out the 27th, is ACOD, or Adult Case of Divorce, or Adult Children of Divorce. And as Beat just pointed out, they have ALF, seasons 2 through 4. But yeah, it's, and then Star Trek Insurrection, Freaks and Geeks, both those coming out the 1st of, or sorry, the 28th of January. And then On Air, so everything that's coming out this week that I think is worth mentioning, starting with tomorrow, December 29th, is at 9 p.m. on CBS, is the 2-hour special presentation of the 38th annual Kennedy Center Honors, which has George Lucas, who were the, there was a music, I think a couple musicians in there that they were honoring, and really interesting for me to see. And Stephen Colbert is hosting, so you know it's going to be good. Wednesday, December 30th at 3:01 a.m., Amazon has the second season premiere of Mozart in the Jungle. 10 p.m. on Esquire is the second season finale of Going Deep with David Reese, which I saw the pet episode, or How to Pet a Dog and How to Make Toast. I love the show now.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it's great. And then 11 p.m., Esquire has the 1-hour special presentation of Team Ninja Warrior. It's a preview special. Thursday, December 31st, True TV at 11 p.m. has the 4th season finale of Billy on the Street. Friday, January 1st, Happy New Year, at 9 p.m. on PBS is the 90-minute special presentation of Sherlock. Saturday, January 2nd, at 9 p.m. on Stars is the 1st season finale of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Show I gotta catch up on. Sunday, January 3rd at 8 p.m. on ABC is the 1-hour second season premiere of Gallivant. And I have to read the title out, because for, as someone who was doing Starts and Stops all of last year and saw the cancellation bear going, oh, the show sucks. I love this, the name of the first episode for Gallivant. A new season, a.k.a. Suck It, Cancellation Bear. It's like they looked at TV by the numbers and was like, hey, fuck you, sort of deal.
We got to talk about the Gallivant thing in a minute as soon as you finish up on this.
Yeah. And then 8:30 p.m., Fox has the series premiere of Barrett Cooper's Guide to Surviving Life, which I don't know if it's on Hulu or where I saw it, but I saw this episode, and it's a good show. It looks like it's going to be a decent show.
It looks pretty funny.
Yeah. And then Monday, this is when everything comes back. I've highlighted a couple here. 8 p.m. on CBS is the first season winter premiere of Supergirl. NBC has the time slot premiere of Superstore, which means this is episode 4, not the first 3 that they had. Same thing with at 8:30 p.m. on NBC with Telenovela. This is episode 4 of Telenovela, not episode 1 or 2, since they already aired them. And then at 9 p.m. CBS has the second season winter premiere of Scorpion. And then the pull list, some comic books that I found interesting. DC Comics, Black Canary number 6, Harley Quinn and Power Girl number 6, Superman Annual number 3, and then Wonder Woman number 47. Marvel, All New Wolverine number 3, Captain America White number 5. This is the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale book. The art is exquisite in there. Deadpool and Cable Split Second, Nova number 3, and then Rocket Raccoon and Groot number 1. Image Comics, you have Black Magic number 3, Lazarus number 21, Rat Queens number 14, Ringside number 2, and Spawn number 259. Archie Comics, you have Jughead number 3, written by Chip Zdarsky, so you know it's good. And then IDW, you have Gem and the Holograms number 10, Lock and Key, Shades of Terror adult coloring book. I'm only mentioning that because it is an adult coloring book, and it's Lock and Key, and then Orphan Black, Helsinki, number 2 of 5. And that is Curtain Calls. Right. So
Gallivant, just
Gallivant, that's the
because job. I went to, they were advertising that it's coming back, but for some reason when I go to Sunday's listings, they're listing episodes from last season. They're, I think it was episode 1, episode 4, 6, and 8. So they're trying to give you highlights, I guess, from the last season. And so the new episode isn't listed on Comcast, on my Comcast, as coming out until the following Sunday.
That's weird.
It's weird. They were saying Gallivant's coming back this coming Sunday, but I go to look it up to record it, and it's all listed as old eps. So I don't know exactly what their methodology is, or if it's just some screw-up on Comcast part.
It
but
could
the following
be
Sunday is when they have the new episode listed in their little preview thing. So,
yeah, it could be Comcast, because Comcast, like, this whole time has been, like, they've been notorious. This whole no, see, TV Guide has it as new. Yeah, TV Guide has it listed as a new season, aka Suck It, Cancellation Bear, and World's Best Kiss. Which also, hey, I'll point out, Kylie Minogue's in this season, dude. And they got Weird Al Yankovic back.
He's coming back, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, it looks like we're going to have another great fun time on Sunday nights.
Isn't it only 5 episodes?
Hey, same thing with, it's like it was last year. Like, hey, we're only getting 5 episodes or like 5 weeks of the of.
I think we got 8 last year.
Yeah, but hey, I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna watch every one of them, and all that. So, we got something special for you, folks. Beatmaster is gonna come out from behind the keyboard, and it's where we don't have to interpret for him, but because we're gonna talk Star Wars: The Force Awakens. This is the show that or the movie. That is the 7th movie out in the franchise.
Evan's really need to explain Star Wars to people?
Actually, no. The funny part is, and I think, because I think I told you guys this, but my friend was, and it still makes me laugh, my friend was shouting out the spoiler, the major spoiler at the end of the movie to people at church. And I'm like, really? Like, but it's for people who didn't watch. He was like, oh, they're like, oh, I want to see Star Wars. He's just like, Han died. I'm like, why?
By the way, just so you know that we're assholes, we're apparently spoiling the hell out of this movie now.
Yes.
So
we are going to spoil. We are going to spoil this stuff. Generally, what we're going to do with a lot of the things here is we're going to spoil it. So hey, your warning is.
Oh, you mean that thing that I danced around in The Hateful Eight because you hadn't seen it yet?
And I told you, spoil it.
I know.
Go ahead.
I know. But we will. And I'm sorry that we're getting this late. We will do our best to at least warn you when we're going to spoil a movie. At this point in time, it seems like everybody and their dog has seen Star Wars: The Force Awakens. So I don't think... And also, if you haven't been online and had some asshole screw it up for you, or seen a billion articles post things about, like, well, who knew that Leia and Han's kid was such an asswipe and things like that. It's already
anyone who saw it. Girls.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Corey or Beat, how did you guys feel about Star Wars? About seeing The Force Awaken?
Go ahead, Beat.
Thank God they didn't mess it up.
Yeah. Like that's the other part though too that sort of surprised me here is my coworker, he goes that his one friend will not see it because J.J. Abrams is doing it, and I'm like, why? Because George Lucas did a great job on the last 3.
You know, I'm gonna cut you off because here's the thing. Yes, the prequels were, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, and that's the way reviews work. Made out of dicks, and I think.
Wait, is that what Matt Vincent was telling me to eat?
Probably, he was telling me to eat Star Wars, but just the Phantom Menace, which is, of course, a ghostly penis shaped like a lightsaber. So I agree that in all things Lucas, that this was not a good moment for him making those prequels or screwing around with the originals by saying, oh, Han can't just shoot a guy in cold blood. Although in Empire, he walks into a room, sees Vader, and pulls out his pistol and starts firing right away, no questions asked. Let's face it, that's who Han is. That's why we like Han. That's why we didn't like any little pussy bastards that were in the prequels. Anyway, so remember, though, we would not have any Star Wars if it wasn't for George Lucas.
No, yeah.
And every bad decision he made, he's made some ultimately fantastic decisions, including the figures, including the movies, not including the Ewok movies or the holiday special so much, but at the same time, he also sold the property to Disney. That was his choice. And he perfectly acknowledged that J.J. Abrams was going to do the film, and he liked the film. Lucas liked the new movie.
No, yeah.
So if you feel like you're somehow being true to Lucas's vision was to sell it and give it to people who would do something else with it.
I feel like, honestly, this is where I feel like with this, is George Lucas, and we're getting way off topic on this, but we got a good 20 minutes before I'm going to wrap up. George Lucas, I feel like he didn't really have an idea on what he wanted to do with it. He was probably perfectly fine with just, you know, letting it sit there. I'm sure Steven Spielberg was cool with that, but
I'm sure his vision was just a Jar Jar Ewok Bukkake scene,
yeah,
straight up on fucking digital 70mm.
Let me jump in to play devil's advocate in this case. I don't want to, but we got thanks to him, we got characters like Darth Maul.
Uh-huh.
We got epic cities, epic worlds. We had a world to explore additionally to the... That was different from the first one, from the first trilogy. And then when we come to J.J. Abrams, we see that he condensed the world. It yeah, felt like a smaller world, a smaller universe. And that George Lucas has a vision, apparently, that works. But yeah, not directing. He's not good with actors. that's the thing. That's
no. I don't disagree with you. I think it's funny because what you're sort of saying, and I don't disagree with it, but it's also a sad statement at the same time, is that people didn't want Star Wars to change; they wanted more of the same. Because if you look at the biggest arguments made about The Force Awakens, it's that it's very repetitive of A New Hope. A lot of the same things happen that happened before. A lot of the character arcs and things seem like they were very similar to what happened before. And that was comforting, and that's what people have been wanting.
And
we didn't like the prequels because the prequels were not like Star Wars to us.
They were a little bit more Star Trek to begin with, like more talky.
Which is
less action.
Really funny when you're saying that in comparison to the film that J.J. Abrams directed.
Yeah, but like going with that, like I saw comparisons to a New Hope with this, but I didn't care. Like I'm sitting there going, okay, yeah, we're gonna start here, but this is to assure people. Like I saw it more as an assurance, you know, with the I'm forgetting what the planet was that was like the new Death Star sort of thing. Like we have that, and we have that blowing up and all these other things, and we have our Obi-Wan Kenobi dying, the Starkiller base, that's what it was, thank you Evan. We have it like our Obi-Wan Kenobi dying as a comparison, but I feel like episode 8 is going to be completely different because of that fact that we now don't need... We know that it's in good hands with Disney and with J.J. Abrams probably helping with Episode 8. I don't know how far his extent goes.
No, I'm happy that's not helping. It's Rian Johnson's movie, and that's very important for me, at least.
Yeah. And, you know, and they're putting it... And Disney's putting it into the hands of... that of capable of good directors who have a good vision, and good writers who have a good vision for where they want to see this overarching trilogy, or, you know, four movies, however many movies they want to do for the story arc, sort of thing. That's ultimately where I got getting out of this movie, besides the fact of, oh, why isn't Luke in any of the promo material? And again, spoilers, because any mention of Luke but outside of Rey's fever dream, which you see in the trailer, would be a massive spoiler. Like, this is what, and this is my same coworker. He goes, like, the next day when I went in, he's like, so how was Luke in there? That's all I want to know. I'm like, I'm not going to say a word. I'm not going to tell you. I will to say anything would be to spoil the movie. Sort of deal. But I don't know. So what were you guys' opinions on the main three, Poe Dameron, Finn and Rey characters?
Best part of the movie.
Well, yeah. We could talk about the movie, but I mean, with them essentially,
No, they were for me the best part of the movie. The three characters. Yeah.
Because I mean, the interesting part for this is IFC this week played Attack the Block, which was where a lot of people got introduced to John Boyega, and I'm like, that's his Star Wars audition tape. That seeing him in there, and Corey, if you got a reboot, go for it. I mean, we'll probably be talking. If not, give us your overarching thing about the movie. If you could, and he left. He's frozen. Okay. But no, I mean, he, like, because again, watching Attack the Block, it's like, all right, this is him, because he's handling a sword throughout the whole thing. He's handling, you know, and he's looking complete badass. And then you get in here, and yeah, he is a little whiny in there, but it's more like I sense it more as needing it as an urgency, like needing a pilot as an urgency, not I'm whiny because, oh, I didn't get to go to get the power converters under the Tashi station, like Luke was in episode 4, sort of deal. The same time, I mean, like, I told people this. I think I mentioned this before. Like, seeing the opening cinematic, did you see it in 3D?
Of course.
Okay, so tell me if you had this, but like, from watching the opening cinematic in 3D, it had this moment for me of like I was back in 67, or when the first movie came out, and seeing Star Wars for the very first time, you know, seeing Star Wars Episode 4. That's what that feel invoked that feeling of for me.
67.
Or what? I don't know exactly when it came out. When the first Star Wars came out?
77. Yeah.
77. Sorry, I was a decade early.
My mother worked in a video store for the first 10 years of my life, so I could watch it any day almost. So it's ingrained in my brain, and I held it in high regards. But I'm not a fanatic about it, so certain things can change for me, as Corey implied before, that people don't want things to change, to stay the same. And J.J. did it admirably, because he had to please the fans, mm-hmm. do something new, lay the groundwork for expansion of this whole world. But still, he can still tell a story well, very constrained stories.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to laying bigger things that have more substance, that go under the surface, aren't his thing, as we have seen in Star Trek, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It lacked the depth. And with Star Wars, because he had pre-existing work, he could take over and hand it over to another director. He was the right man to do this job.
Mm-hmm.
So even though your colleague has worries with him being the director, which I fully understand, because he had the same issues, but he did the best he could with the product he delivered. And after all, it's a product.
Yeah.
It's not an artwork. It's a product done by a committee.
Yeah. So, Corey, you're back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
your overarching feelings on Star Wars on episode 4 or episode 7.
Episode 4. Oh, jeez. What a piece of crap. I really enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. I really loved the new characters. I am both disappointed in an understanding of the fate of Han being the original character that everybody loves and was, for a lot of us, you know, what Star Wars was kind of about. He was what was missing from the prequels for me, is somebody with that attitude and feel. He has been not the heart of Star Wars so much as, like, it's been more Luke's journey and Luke's story. But he was the fun. As soon as Han got introduced, Luke's attitude changed and improved. The way that the characters interacted with each other improved. I just thought that it brought a lot more out. And losing him made a certain degree of sense for the story, although I think the scene was a little pained in how they did it. I didn't quite buy into that. That was one of those stupid move things. But it was just so telegraphed. You know, walking across the bridge, the you know, will you help me make my decision and stuff. It was like, oh, God, that's... But that's the kind of drama that you kind of expect from Star Wars anyways. So while I didn't love that, I understood and I appreciated it in the context of the film. But how much the movie focused on the new characters is what I wanted it to do. Yeah. And how those new characters were portrayed and how they were interesting. I think Rey was delightful. I think that she is a strong character, and I've seen people argue that did she deserve to be... Was she Mary Sue the whole time? It's like, well, wasn't Luke the Mary Sue of the originals? And the fact that he goes from being a farmer to also being a great pilot to being a force-wielding Jedi who's wielding a lightsaber and fighting all these things to being a great gunman in the Millennium Falcon along with Han. No, Rey... story, we don't know all the background of who she is, and we also know that the Force chooses people, and it kind of sets them on the path to great things. I loved Finn. I thought he was great. I loved his storyline. I like the fact that he struggles with doing the right thing versus the wrong thing from the very beginning, which is, in a lot of ways, Han's journey in the original films. Although I saw Han's attitude more in Poe. And I really dug Poe. As soon as that moment happened where Poe is looking at Kylo Ren and he says, "So which one of us talks? Me? You? Me? You?" I was like, crap, I love this movie. I immediately felt like I was at ease in that they understood how to insert humor into this, what humor is, without being overbearing to... We're going to dummy this up with, you know, well, here's where we have someone silly dance around in a clown suit with long ears and a racist voice. or even the droids. The droids have always been the comic relief of the original trilogy. And that's perfectly okay because it's not about the droids, but they are the part that kind of goes hand in hand with everything else to lighten the mood to a certain degree. You've got the very tense action going on with Ben versus Vader. But you got R2, like, squeaking out in the corner, and C-3PO cursing them out, like, why aren't you doing more? You know, God, I can't handle all this stress. I assume he's got a red arm because he's got an ulcer in it. As far as Kylo Ren, there's a moment in the script where Han and Leia are talking, and they say that he's got too much Vader in him. What I saw was not Vader, it was Anakin.
Yeah,
it was that kind of like whiny, too easily corrupted, you know, can't find his path thing, but not as annoying. And I don't know if it's because it wasn't Hayden Christensen or if it was just that they were working something a little better. I don't mind a not all powerful villain who is torn emotionally, because there are other things that are obviously behind it, like Stoke and the other dude who was hanging out with him that really I kept expecting to be wiped out, but he was at the same level as what Ren was. And I thought that was good because it doesn't mean that we have an all-powerful bad guy through the series, but it also didn't turn out, well, here's our bad guy for this movie, and then maybe there'll be a cool bad guy in the next movie, and then maybe there'll be a cool bad guy in the next movie.
And honestly, I think that's sort of what the detriment to, and this is going to sound like blasphemy, but to the original trilogy is, especially with one of the reasons why I've sort of backed out of the Star Wars comics, is you read the comics and you understand, you know, that, oh, this takes place between episode 4 and 5 or whatever, and you listen to Vader take orders from the Emperor, which is fine, you know, that's how it's supposed to be, because it's following the whole Sith doing the Order of Two thing, but then it's like, oh, you're going to listen to this general in the Imperial Army, and Vader's like, no, I'm not, and it's sort of like, okay, you're trying to put on these limitations to make him seem not as badass as everyone wants to think he is, but then it's like you have him be just as badass. With this, it's almost that reverse. With Kylo Ren, it's almost that reverse of he's not really badass, but he wants you to think he's that badass. I think he's the only one I've seen use the Force to stop a blaster bolt.
Well, now I talked about that with somebody at work today. Someone who's had a problem with the fact that Kylo Ren had that kind of power that he could stop a blaster bolt. But do you remember in Empire when Han walks into essentially the dining room, sees Vader, and shoots at him? Mm-hmm. Vader didn't deflect the bolt with his lightsaber like you would normally see Jedi do. He stops it with his hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that it's not a new Force trick. It's displayed in a very different way, and that's partly because of effects and partly because it looks damn impressive, and probably because Kylo Ren is powerful in different ways than Vader was.
Yeah,
because he's not actually a Sith, but he's a Force wielder.
Yeah, Kylo seems like he's got a lot of power, is what it seems like, but there's no control for a lot of it.
Right. Even he throws his tantrums and destroys the panel twice, and the people go step back and turn around, walk away.
And that was that moment as well of where it's like, okay, now Kylo's going to go and listen to some AFI and Dashboard Confessional in the other room and write a sad poetry in his notebook.
The show to his mental weakness in this moment in a funny way. Mm-hmm. And that this was enough to tell the people what's his state. And I put probably Adam Driver's acting unlike Hayden Christensen's.
Yeah.
And it was a character I loved as well in a bad way, but he did his part for the character as it was written. He did his best and I bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the best thing was Poe Dameron with Finn, their chemistry from the breakout.
Which a lot of people are interpreting as Poe being gay, which I didn't pick up on that when I watched it. When I think about it now, I'm like, well, that certainly seems possible. And I have no feelings about it either way. It would be cool in the sense that it would be our first on-screen gay character that we know of in the films. And it would also be like, well, if he's not, he's not. I don't have a dog in that hunt.
No, I think what that could be is a lot of people interpret movies very differently and put in their own things. Like, there are people who could take the Karate Kid and have Daniel be the villain, even though for 90% of the people out there, Daniel's the good guy.
No, Miyagi's a villain.
Well, and I think a lot of people do that same thing with this. It's like, oh, well, he's being all friendly and stuff, so he must be gay. And like, no, I think it's just like, hey, if anything, it seems to be more like Turk and, oh god, crap, that there's still like Turk and JD from Scrubs, but then there's still that undertone of homoeroticism in there. I mean
it could be anything, and that's things we don't have enough to explore the characters, other than the fact that their friendship was very cool and compelling, and if there was some sort of romantic feelings between them, cool, you know, maybe
it's just guy love between two guys. That's all it is.
but I still think that whatever the case, you know, if it's misinterpreted that it's just two guys who are friendly, then it's two guys who are friendly. I don't think it matters, but I appreciate that it could be more. And I also, I understand people who have loved Star Wars their whole lives and have wanted that one trait of a character that they could kind of attach themselves to. Just like, you know, having a woman as the lead role and having an African-American, well, not American, I'll just say a black guy as one of the lead roles is great as well. You know, and people are saying, well, it's the social justice warrior version of Star Wars. No, it's not. It's just an inclusive version of Star Wars that maybe wasn't thought about as much in 79 or whenever the first Star Wars came out. 77, yeah, crap. Sorry.
While you were gone, we had this whole thing because I said that the first one came out in 67 and then 77. And I'm like, I was a decade off, whatever.
I was alive when Star Wars came out. I saw it. But... I hate when people find that inclusiveness somehow discludes them because it's been their thing for so long, and it's I can't possibly open up enough to let people of color.
So hold on, I want to hit on
my
this
world.
Yeah, I want to hit on this real quickly. So they're okay with, especially with if you go by the canon of the prequels of clone troopers, so they're cool with the clones all being of Maori Pacific Islander looking descent,
and shitty shooters.
Yeah, and then to that extent, all the stormtroopers in the original trilogy be that, as opposed to what they establish here of what the clone troopers or what the stormtroopers very well could have been, and that be kids that were taken at like when they're like 4 or 5 years old and then trained.
Gregor, you're looking for cognizant thought in the race wars. That's not...
It's true. That's true.
I've tried to make heads or tails of the internet, and it's just caused me pain.
Yeah.
So, like the prequels, I just choose to ignore it. It's just... It's easier that way.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't mention is Carrie Fisher. We avoided her on purpose, I think.
I didn't avoid her on purpose. I was very glad to see her in this. I was excited to see Leia. I had disappointment in... You always had hope for her and Han and their relationship. And to see them, you know, not be together. And he's still the scoundrel. He's still the nerf herder. She's still doing what she needs to do, being part of the Resistance now when she was part of the Rebels before. You know, she's a general as opposed to a princess, but she's still a princess in the fact that
she's at one of the Top Gear locations. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was grateful to see her back.
Yeah.
I was understanding as to why her part was not broader in this. But again, I watched this movie and I appreciated it more because it was about these new characters as opposed to all the old characters. How much do I want Luke really involved in the rest of the films? I want him involved in the way that Yoda or Ben were involved. I don't want him involved as suddenly being turned into the hero of everything. Mm-hmm. I want to explore Star Wars through different eyes. And that's always been the case for me. That's part of the issues I had with the prequels, is that I wanted it to be about different people, different characters in the history of the Star Wars universe. I didn't want to just be telling us all about Ben and Anakin. I understand why they did it, and it was a safe bet, but I Darth Vader was better as a mystery.
Yeah. No, yeah, I see that. Go ahead, B.
I was just mentioning Carrie because Han Solo's portrayal... I never saw Harrison Ford doing a serious acting job and enjoyment of his work as in this movie. Indiana Jones 4 was atrocious and he wasn't there really with its spirit, but then Carrie Fisher comes along like she needs some acting classes again.
Well, she hasn't really been acting for a long time.
No, she's been like the only
she's been writing, she's been doing other things and stuff. I don't think, I mean,
she consults writing on for the prequels.
We can argue that the acting was not often the greatest part about Star Wars. They were a young cast at first, and some of them grew into it, and some of them didn't. And Harrison Ford was probably one of the better actors at the time of the movie. He had the most experience from all the young people, as opposed to, you know, Kenobi. Alec Guinness obviously was a different level of actor than everybody, and that's why he was sort of embarrassed to be in the film versus everyone else. But Harrison Ford was the guy with the more experience out of them, and showed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why so much hinged on him in the scenes that he was in. Do I think that Carrie Fisher was like out and out bad in this? No, but I don't know how much they were really giving her to work with.
Yeah. So I think that's going to wrap it up here for us. Final thoughts, real quick, final thoughts on the movie. How many times do you want to go see it? Sort of, because mine's like pretty high. Like, I would like to go see it every day if I could.
I don't know that I'm rushing back out to see it again in the theater. I will definitely look forward to seeing it when it comes out in ways that I can watch it at home.
So 8 months on Canadian Netflix, you're going to move to Canada for a day just to watch it.
Yeah, we'll talk again about how I watched The Hateful Eight.
Beat, your thoughts?
Yeah, it depends on the sequel, because how Rey turns out to be who she turns out to be will affect the rest of my opinion.
Okay.
Because we're saying they're compressing the world and everything like that, so it hinges a little bit on that. But overall, I watched it. I had the chance to go again the same day. I didn't took it. It was enough for one day.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want to blow out Star Wars for myself. I really enjoyed seeing the movie. I'm getting tired of every article that's coming around and saying one single thing about Star Wars or reprinting something that somebody else said about Star Wars. And I'm about to, you know, lock my Facebook down from even seeing it mentioned again for a little while, because it's just terrible when something is taken that far. And I understand it's a mecca for a lot of people. And I love it. And I don't have a problem with the merchandising. I do have a problem with, like, car commercials somehow trying to tie themselves into Star Wars. Like, I have a problem with Subway tying itself to the Hunger Games. But I kind of am done with the chatter. I liked the movie. I'd like to just enjoy the movie for a little while. I am sickened by the amount of blogs that are just, Star Wars sucked, and this is why. Click me, you sons of bitches.
That was the first one that I saw was, and this is going to be, honestly, probably should be the last thing, because I'm trying to stick to an hour, but that I saw it was that Max Landis didn't like Star Wars Episode 7. I'm like, okay. And I'm pretty sure there are plenty of people out there who are going, well, I didn't like Superman American Alien, so...
I don't mind you saying that you didn't enjoy it, but it's the things that say, you know, it sucked. No, I don't.
Because I only saw the headline, and it's like, all right, you are the clickbaitiest of clickbait titles ever.
Right.
Bye-bye. Good day with you, sir.
And they were warming up for that by saying, here's why the prequels are way good and you're wrong for hating them. No, I'm not. Because, again, it's my opinion, and I'm allowed to have my opinion. You're allowed to have your opinion. And you can even express your opinion on your goddamn blog. That is the joy of the internet, is that it's free for everybody. But, you know, when you start your title off by saying, you're wrong for thinking the way you do, that just means you're a dick. And I don't like you.
No, yeah. So that's going to wrap it up here for us. Folks, we're moving. We're packing on up. We're heading over to another network. We're joining the Galactic Netcast. I think we're probably gonna shoot for next week if all it's.
No, I think it's a little while. I think
is it
Dave's working out some things, and I want to beta this for a while.
Okay,
we got kings to work out.
Okay, so we're gonna do a couple more betas here, but we're working on going to gncasts.com. That's where we'll be at in the very near future. And you can, but until then, you can still subscribe over there. where they have such great shows like The Alien Invasion, Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Weird World Weekly, Podcast of Terror, voted filthiest podcast of Galactic Netcast 3 years running.
Which is funny because we've been on less than one.
Yeah, Adventure Party and Who News and Reviews and so much more. Go to the Patreon. They're going to be doing some so great things with the Patreon, this little inside baseball thing I'll give to you there, including things like the hangout that we just had that quickly turned into the post hangout, but whatever. All that, and follow us on Twitter. We're at Elsnerds. That will not change. You can send us mail at mail@elsnerds.com. Excuse me. And watch us here next. We record just about every Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. West, and like I think what 2:30 British time. So it'll help you figure it out for the rest of the world. But yeah, all that's left to be said is this has been an Don't Tell Glenn production. We'll see you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.